You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. John Diard, and welcome to the Life Spa podcast, where we prove the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with modern science. And today we have a special guest. Her name is Dr. Sonia Jensen. She's a naturopathic physician. She's also written a book, and it's all about her ability to guide women to reclaim their power through hormonal wisdom, emotional depth, and ancestral healing. She links a lot of the ancient Ayurvedic practices with modern science. It's an incredible story she has. I'd like to welcome her to our podcast, Dr. Sonia Jensen. So Sonia, welcome. I love your work. I mean, the connection between hormones and trauma and how it affects our mental health is something actually that Ayurveda has talked about for thousands of years. So I'm kind of excited to kind of bridge this gap between what Western medicine is now beginning to start to talk about and what the ancient wisdom has been talking about for thousands of years. Tell me a little bit more about your work, how you got started doing this work, and where you're at today.
Yeah, thanks for that question. And thanks for having me here today, too. I grew up actually with Ayurveda in my home and not really knowing that it was such a big part of our lifestyle. So coming from an Indian family, it just becomes a part of your everyday conversation. And it really wasn't until I went into naturopathic medical school that I started to really understand the importance of everything that I was learning growing up. And I never really knew I was going into this side of health. I was a cell biologist. I was doing cell and molecular biology. So very like left brain and thinking about health in different ways. And even, you know, my family would talk about certain herbs or things that qualities of food and whatnot. And instantly my mind would be like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. That makes no sense to me. And it really wasn't until I went on my own health journey and own understanding and got, you know, moved towards naturopathic medical school that I understood the connection between our physical body and our emotional body and the choices that we make. And so my work with women today really is based off of my own personal experience and the traumas that I experienced and the healing that I went through that showed me that because we're a whole person, we're not only carrying our own story, we're carrying our generational story. And so it took me down this path of trying to really understand this work so I could do better for my patients and take them as far as I had gone in my own healing.
That's amazing. I wonder if you could like create a roadmap for us. Okay. Like you have stress or trauma. We all have some version of that. Yeah. And then how does that, what happens next? The stress comes in, we feel it, then that happens, that affects this part of the physiology, and then this part of the physiology. And then can you create a roadmap of how you would track it and then kind of maybe see along the way, it could create different and a variety of symptoms, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So instantly when we're under stress, we're going to release certain hormones to help us deal with that experience. So initially it might be adrenaline to get us going into that fight or flight mode. But when we're in that state on a chronic level, so I think today's world, even, you know, trying to get the deadlines met or getting the kids to school like I did this morning, making the lunches, the breakfast, just our everyday puts us into this fight or flight state. And when it's chronic, we're increasing cortisol. And when cortisol is high, what we don't know is that progesterone has to be low, which is our hormone that actually helps us feel calm, that regulates our cycle. So when we're consistently in that high cortisol state, initially, when we're in that state of always doing and always have the to-do list in our minds and always on the go, rushing from one task to the next, your brain is thinking you're in danger, is constantly giving you those hormones to satisfy the pattern that it's been in. And so if we're constantly high with cortisol and we're constantly low in progesterone, what might show up symptomatically for a lot of women is chronic fatigue. It might be imbalanced hormones, so they're having irregular cycles. It might be more anxiety or fear around things that they never thought they were fearful of. So you start to notice these symptoms that are connected to your hormones, but really the underlying foundation of that was the stress that we've been holding on to. And that's just today. If we were wired for stress growing up, depending on our experiences, we've created certain patterns on how to deal with similar experiences. And so when we have that pattern embedded in our bodies and our brain, that is what the body is going to rely on for information. And the brain will always predict how it needs to perform or what it needs to do. And so this is where we get stuck in that chronic low level of hormones, which then translates into the emotional and the mental health side.
So, you said something interesting. You said that when you're under a lot of stress, you produce a lot of cortisol. But you also said that when you have high cortisol, you have to have low progesterone. Can you kind of clarify that for me? Because I understand that when you have cortisol, the body will actually borrow and use progesterone to convert directly into cortisol. So, chronic stress will lower the progesterone, and that can leave you with something which is called an unopposed estrogen, where your estrogen levels may be normal, but because of progesterone is low because of stress, you end up with high estrogen, which can create all kinds of weight gain and growth related issues that we don't necessarily want. Could you map that out a little bit? Because when you said that high cortisol means low progesterone, is that kind of the way it works, or does it actually just usurp the progesterone to make more cortisol with it? How does that work?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you said. It's the progesterone, it gets borrowed by cortisol, so it's
Okay.
converting into cortisol, and so the body's ideal scenario is to help you survive. And so it's going to pull from your progesterone, creating that gap between estrogen and progesterone, so it skews the ratio, which creates the opportunity in the body to create those growths like fibroids or cysts and that irregularity in the cycle. So that's exactly it. It's exactly what you explained.
So how does it work when you have, now we have estrogens into the picture, because now you have this, the body's got stress, low progesterone, high estrogen, then you have all the xenoestrogens in the system. How does that work? Like how do those, and I'm assuming that those toxestrogens are worse than regular, bioidentical estrogens. So how does that play into the role of kind of the symptom, and then we'll kind of, then I want to dive in from there. I want to go into your gut, because gut must play a role in this thing. Let's figure that out too. But let's talk about the estrogen piece. I think a lot of people are confused, like, okay, estrogen is good. They're giving me the, now it's like the new thing. Everybody should be on HRT because it's not as bad as it once was. And it's a whole nother story. But so where does, how does all that fall into place? The estrogens, progesterone, should you be taking them? High estrogens, are they bad? Are they good? What's really going on?
Let's talk about the cycle first, and then that'll give people kind of an understanding of where estrogen comes in and where that, if you have a skewed ratio, where it causes issues. So in our first half of our cycle, so after we bleed around day three, estradiol starts to go up. And as estradiol is going up, there's certain things that follow. And so LH will get triggered so that we can ovulate. But in terms of symptomatically, you may feel more energy, your brain feels clearer, you're taking more risk because estrogen suppresses fear. Estrogen supports serotonin and it also supports dopamine. So you just feel more of that pleasure and reward around that time, or you should. If you don't, that means there's some challenges with your estrogen. As soon as we ovulate, post-ovulation, progesterone needs to rise, and it needs to do this really beautiful curve in order for our body to feel steady, in order for our nervous system to feel steady. And then as they both fall, then we signal the body to release the endometrium, and then we bleed. And so there's this dance that's happening between estrogen and progesterone throughout the entire cycle. But if your progesterone is low and it doesn't get to peak, then your estrogen is going to look like it's higher than the progesterone in that luteal phase, which will create PMS symptoms like the water retention, like the anxiety, like the depression, like the irregular cycle. Maybe your cycle is a bit shorter. Maybe that woman has fibroids or cysts or fibrocystic breasts. That can happen as well. So, because now we've skewed progesterone, estrogen is just more available. And now we have estrogens in our environment, the plastics, the products that we're using, it's in our water, it's everywhere, pesticides. And so your liver and your gut have to do a good job at understanding what is your estrogen, what's coming from the environment, what do I need to detoxify out of my body to create that homeostatic level again. But if our gut's compromised, if we're constipated, if we don't have the right microbiome to help support that detoxification, or if your liver is stagnant, then we're not going to cleave that estrogen and release it out of our bowels. We're going to recirculate it, which creates an even bigger gap, which then leads to a lot of these symptoms. So it's so nuanced when it comes to hormones. So the one thing I always tell women is that your hormones are not the cause, they're an effect. It's everything in the environment, our stressors from physical to chemical to emotional, that are telling your hormones how to behave. And then it's your emunctories and your systems that are trying to balance those hormones out when they're not behaving the way we want them to. I don't know if that makes sense, the way I kind of painted that picture.
Yeah, I think it makes really good sense, and thanks for clarifying that. I wonder now, since you did mention the gut, and how we're supposed to kind of eliminate some of these toxic estrogens, where does gut health play a role in this, in terms of Yeah, because we know that your gut is critically important for obviously assimilation and detoxification, and there's a lot of detox that takes place through the lymphatic system. Particularly hormones are detoxed through the lymphatic system, the gut-associated lymph, and there's some interesting studies that show that the lymphatic system is trying to deliver fatty acids to the body, which are precursors to those hormones. And in Ayurveda, we always look at the lymphatic system first. It's the study of longevity called rasayana, which is rasa is the lymph. It's those kinds of fluids in the body. And if the lymphatic system is congested, you're not going to be able to deliver the fatty acids to make the hormones that you need. And as a result, you go to the doctor and they check your hormone levels and they say, oh, well, you're low, so therefore you need more hormone. Like you just said, it has nothing to do with the reason why you have an altered and imbalance in your hormones. Everything to do with the delivery, logically, of those fatty acids. And the lymph's also trying to detoxify you. And it's also trying to carry your immune system. It's a pretty complicated system. And so I wonder, talk to me about and of course your lymphatic system starts in your digestive system. So if we track it all the way upstream, we have stress impacting cortisol levels, which rise, progesterone levels low, estrogen levels are perceived to be high. Now we have all these skewed hormonal responses, but it seems like what's in between those two responses is gut health, right? So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I have this saying, how you digest life is reflected in how you digest your food. And so in terms of, how we're digesting our stress often shows up in our gut, and the gut is everything. It's how we're going to remove what's not needed in the body, but also absorb what is needed. And so when we're not doing that work, the hormones aren't getting the signals that they need on how to perform from cell to cell. They're not going to travel well, like you were saying. And so to me, the gut is everything. So when I work with women, I always lay out those foundations of your gut system, your lymphatic system, your kidneys, your liver. All of these emunctories are the most important thing for your hormones to understand how to behave. And so, yes, we could give you progesterone, we could give you estrogen to help you symptomatically in that moment and replace what might be missing. But you will hit a plateau if your body is not getting what it needs, if you're not getting the nourishment that it needs. So, if your microbiome isn't behaving well, or if you're not eating seasonally, if you're not eating for your constitution or your body type, your gut is the first thing that we have to work on so that we can create that better communication and detoxify those excess estrogens.
So what are the main things you see that are screwed up in the gut that would raise some red flags?
Yeah, I often see women think it's normal to just have a bowel movement once a week, sometimes every couple of days. So constipation has kind of become the norm. And so that's a big one. So consistent bloating, I notice. And, there's that discernment piece to try to teach patients too. Like, is it your gut? Is it something to do with your hormones? If you're getting bloated around ovulation, we want to make sure we're doing an ultrasound to see if there's any cysts. Are you getting bloated in the last half of your cycle during that luteal phase? So then we want to look at how is your gut performing. So if there's a lot of inflammation in the gut, if there's leaky gut that's going on, which I find most people have due to the stresses, which we talked about, the emotional, the physical, and the chemical, then we have to fix that first so that you can absorb your nutrients better. We can decrease the bloating, and then we're actually making serotonin in our gut to help your estrogen and vice versa. So yeah, like you said, like everything, right now, what's been told to women is take the estrogen and that's all you need. You don't have to test or whatever. But I think women really need to understand how nuanced it is and how much of your body is involved in that choreography that your hormones are a part of.
So you also mentioned early on, you mentioned trauma and how trauma plays a role. How do you address that piece? Because it seems like there's just facilitated neural patterns that we just drive down the same stress response road every day of our life that we created as a child, perhaps, and we have no idea we're even doing it. How do we break those patterns, which seem to be, driving the stress to the gut because our gut's perceiving that stress? And then from there, that creates altered digestion, altered lymphatic flow, and the cascade begins to function. So, how do you get to that upstream piece of that puzzle? It seems to be really challenging.
It is challenging because, like you said, it's an imprint and a pattern that's been there for so long. So we have to bring in pattern disruption. And I always start in the physical plane. So when I look at a woman, I'll see, okay, are there like food habits that we need to address? Are there daily habits like breath work and meditation and things like that that we can bring in to help her calm her nervous system? So I always start there. It's all about those decisions that we're making every day. So I'll plant seeds of questions for them. If they're grabbing onto a food that they know is going to deplete them, to ask themselves that question, is this going to nourish me or is this going to deplete me? So we start to disrupt these habits that we have daily. And then all of a sudden there's space for when there's a trigger in our environment. Maybe it's a conversation with our partner. Maybe it's getting stuck in traffic and all of a sudden we're feeling triggered and hot. Or maybe it's a conversation with our child and we're feeling that level of anxiety. We can then pause and actually take a breath and ask ourselves the question of, like, does this actually belong to me? This reaction, is this reaction actually about this moment or was it from before? But we can't get there until we have an awareness that something's been, or someone else has been in the driver's seat, or there's been a different narrator all along in my mind. So the first thing is to be aware that, okay, I have this pattern that's not working for me. And then I can make these like simple choices in my everyday to feed a healthy pattern so that I can start disrupting the one that's really disrupting my life.
So I would imagine that awareness comes from, I always think of the lake analogy, right? The lake is really calm. You can see it, everything, the little tires, stuff way down there, right? You can see the junk that sunk to the bottom if the lake is calm. So first step would be awareness, creating a still lake, which means stilling your nervous system, creating calm. But a lot of people can't still their nervous system. They can't settle it down. So what do you do about those folks who just can't get that level of awareness locked in because maybe that's there's so much stress, they just don't have the capacity or just aren't willing or know how to turn off those alarm bells?
Yeah, that's where depending on the woman that's in front of me, I might send her to somatic therapy. I might send her to EMDR or IFS, like some form of support that will give her some tools. But like you said, time is of essence too. And a lot of women just don't have that time to spend on therapy or that kind of support. So I get them in their bodies. So this is where movement, I find, is really, really important. So the first thing that they do when they wake up, they're doing some form of movement to get their mind out of the monkey mind out of the way, and they're in their bodies, even if it's just for 5 minutes. And then I bring in some rituals throughout the day. So I'll actually ask women to make a joy list. What are some things that you remember that have brought you joy in the past? And that could just be a cup of tea or taking a walk in nature. And so it's not going to happen overnight. It's something that we have to build up towards in terms of feeling that stillness, because I don't think that's actually a reality for a lot of people. But it's how do we move towards that? How do we grab those moments of stillness, those micro moments that all of a sudden then can translate into us pausing a little bit more when we're feeling reactive?
Oh, perfect. Thank you. So the other thing I want to talk about is testosterone. It's men are being over tested for testosterone. They're being probably over prescribed testosterone, and women are being under tested and clearly under prescribed. So what's going on there? What do we do about that? And why is testosterone important for women? Most women think it's a man thing. But it's not really a man thing, is it?
It really isn't. And so testosterone, I mean, we have so many receptors in our brain for testosterone. It's our motivator. It gives us our like zest for life. And it also supports dopamine, so that pleasure and lean muscle, and just regulates our insulin and glucose as well. So it has so many different functions in the body that women are not aware of. Like you said, they think it's a man's hormone and they don't need it. But I have so many women that I test that have low levels of testosterone. And I do think it's because of the chronic stressors that we carry. And it taps into that reserve of testosterone. We start to decline in testosterone around age 25 anyways, but it's the speed at which we decline, which is a challenge because of our environments. And women that are pregnant, I don't know the exact percentage, but one of my mentors had said once that every time a woman is pregnant, she's losing about 15% of her testosterone stores or ability to produce testosterone. It's almost like nature's birth control because it is the thing that gives us libido and desire. And so when I think about that and think about women going into perimenopause, only focusing on estrogen and progesterone, it's so important to look at your testosterone levels to see how we can support them. And that could be through different herbs like Shilajit and Shatavari and ashwagandha. We can do it through that. And some women do thrive on a little bit of testosterone for a short period of time. It can really give them that boost and just that feeling that they've been missing. Like they didn't even know they could feel that way because they got so used to that chronic level of fatigue or that low level of motivation that they've been living with.
It's interesting. You mentioned, if we go back in time, women were probably more often than not having babies pretty shortly after, adolescence, 15 years old, women were having babies. And then by their mid-20s or 30s, you would think that, I don't know if they were having babies later on in life. Nobody really knows that. I don't know. I haven't really looked into that. But clearly, the testosterone seems to dial down in around the 40s, and then progesterone starts to dial down, and the estrogen starts to dial down. So by 50, they're kind of washed up. And nature starts doing weird things after menopause for men and women, kind of. It starts saying, hey, well, you don't really need melatonin anymore because you're not making babies. So we're going to take that away from you. And next thing you know, the body starts saying, not really giving much concern about your longevity. We on that other side of that coin, we really want that longevity. So we start pumping in hormones and melatonin and start hacking the aging process to live a lot longer. And I wonder what you think about this. It's sort of a fine line between, NAD precursors, for example, which are a big thing in the longevity community, which are NMN or MR and these different precursors for NAD, which is another hormone or peptide that dials down as we get older. And there may be some logic to why, our metabolism will slow down as we get older. But we keep trying to crank up, 20, 30-year-old metabolic levels into a 60, 70, and 80-year-old person. And I wonder if that's the reason why we see lots of reports of some of these hormones can be linked to cancer. There are studies showing that NAD precursors can be linked to cancer. So how do you know? I mean, we all want to live longer, but it seems to be a very slippery slope of how much. I mean, I see what I'm guessing your answer would be like, don't mess with the hormones as much as mess with the upstream cause of those hormones. But there sure is a temptation to be taking these youthful generators, which amp up metabolism, but the body slowed it down in a way to kind of die, because we don't get rid of the DNA waste, the DNA damage as well. We don't get rid of the trash as well. So we don't have that nutrition coming in and the anabolic benefits as well, but we have more of a catabolic, things happening in our body where we begin to not repair, recover as quickly. But then we go cranking in all that growth. I just wonder what you think about that. Like, how do you map that out as we get older to live long but gracefully without, doing harm by trying to live longer than maybe we should?
My husband and I often have this conversation, and back in 2012 is when he started really diving into hormones, and we started studying under this OBGYN, and he was all about bioidentical hormones, and I was so resistant because I had this mindset of like, well, nature meant for this to happen. We're supposed to slow down. There's things that change as we age, desire changes as we age. And so, coming from the background that I do, we had multiple generations living in the same house. So I witnessed my grandparents aging a certain way and not relying on these other things. What they relied on was their community and the plate in front of them, and just spirituality. And there was this big transition you physically and you noticeably saw in my grandparents as they aged and the direction that they were taking and how they faced life. And so in the West, I feel like we have this desire to fight what's meant to be or fight aging. And but I also think there's this other side of it to live this health span so that we're living an optimal life because we are, we're living longer than we did before. And so the reason why I bring up my training with the OBGYN, I started to really understand that we are stepping into these phases more depleted, I think, than before. So just from a woman's perspective, when the feminist movement came and we got all these rights to do all these things, which is fantastic because I have so many more choices. And my parents deciding to live here rather than India gave me so many more choices. And education was really like, that is the thing. Like, no one can take your knowledge away. You've got to be educated. We will pay your way for as long as we need to so that you're educated. But what that also created inside of me was that I need to be perfect over here, alongside carrying the mental load of my family at the same time. So even for myself, I have moved into perimenopause. I feel like depleted, even though I do all the quote unquote right things. I eat for my constitution. I eat seasonally. I eat organic. I detox every year. I fast when I'm, when I should. I do all these things, and yet I felt so depleted. And what I learned was that if I use physiological dosing with my patients, in terms of bioidentical hormones, if that's the route that they think they need and they're so depleted that we can't get them eating a certain way because of time and because of money or because of whatever the challenge might be in their life, I found that to be supportive rather than using high doses of things to suppress their ability to do, to focus on the foundation. And so what I have found over the years, my beliefs have loosened a little bit around that, where I think it's great that we're focusing on health, that we're focusing on possibility, but I also think we're losing sight of this really foundational thing, which is community, which is our growth as a human being, which is our spirituality and all of that. The 50s, I feel like the second half of my life, like I'm looking forward to them because our first half is all about external world. It's all about taking care of my kids and taking care of others. I get to finally go inwards. I get to finally connect with source the way I want to. Like I finally get to live life through my own command and not the conditioning from the culture and the society that I've received. So I think there's a lot of things that needs to be undone. But also, I think we're in such a new time where, we're living longer and we want to live well and do all the things. So I don't even know if I have like the quote unquote right answer for this, but I think it's I'm staying curious about my own process and also just witnessing those around me too.
Hey, everybody, I hope you're liking the podcast. If you are liking this podcast, I invite you to go to lifespa.com, read all these hormonal lymph articles I've written. One's called It May Not Be Hormonal, It May Be Your Lymphatic System, articles on the lymph and your hormonal system, articles on the brain's lymphatic system, and how we in Ayurveda link all that together. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter, check out our Ayurvedic store, where you can get all your Ayurvedic herbs at lifespa.com. I love your answer. In India, you know very well that, and also in the centenarian cultures, the older you get, the more revered you are. You carry the wisdom, and everybody looks up to you, right? When I first went to India in the early 19, the middle 1980s, my teacher was my age. We were both in our, I was just turned 30-ish, maybe, not even. And he didn't have any gray hair. And he was so desperate to get gray hair. I was like, why are you, what? Why do you want it? Because we became very close. And he goes, nobody looks at me with any like credibility. Like I'm just this young, new Ayurvedic doctor, but nobody believes me. But if I was older and I looked older, then I would get this respect. It was like such a weird, unique switch in the culture. And then when you look in Ayurveda, we know that there's these life cycles, just like in nature, there's cycles. There's spring is kind of the muddy, rainy time of the year when kids make mucus for a living. And then there's the middle time of the life, which is fire, summer, long days, short nights, and a lot of activity. We're changing the world, raising our kids, like you said, so much about material, just keeping a roof over the heads, paying the bills, raising your family. And then comes the winter, right? The Vata time. And what's interesting is that Vata time of life in Ayurveda is the wisdom years, right? I always say you can become wise or dumb. You can either really begin to understand what life is really about, or be dumb and keep trying to be, in the pitta time of your life, trying to change the world, still making a lot of money, and not turning your attention from outer manipulation of our environment to an inner experience of what life is really about. Find God before it's too late, kind of thing. And so that doesn't really even happen in our culture. We just like put people in homes, and that's it. That's our culture. It's pretty. Old age is just to be feared. But there was a UC, I found a UCLA study that I thought was so cool because it actually showed that not only are we, do we have a desire to kind of find God before it's too late, to thin the veil between the physical and spiritual and become more spiritual in a sense as we get older, we're actually physiologically hardwired to be able to make that happen. In other words, when you're a kid, you can roll downstairs and do it again and again. When you're in the middle of time of your life, you got that fire and that drive to kind of protect your family and make sure everybody's secure. Then the last part of your life, your body starts to kind of, to a certain extent, some strength and things start to leave you. But what starts to happen is you become more wise. You carry this wisdom. So, and that's the vata, the air, which is not fire, which breaks things down, inflames things. It's not earth, which is very congestive and fun as well when you're young. It's actually very light and very clear. And so we move into that time, and the studies seem to back that up, which I think is really cool. So I do think that's a really cool thing for folks to look forward to as we get older, as opposed to just trying to, and we all want to be younger and we can do healthy things. And that's why Ayurveda is so cool. It didn't come up with some new drug, some new peptide, some new precursor that's going to put 10 years on your life that we might find out, oh, by the way, sometimes it causes cancer, which is a fact. That's what happens in some of these things. But nobody talks about that because nobody wants to talk about that. They just want to talk about, I'm going to be lived to be 120. That's the new thing. But in reality is beginning to be aware of the fact that when you that you should, at that time of we get older, there should be, and most people have, a natural desire, if they didn't have it their whole life, to become more spiritual, explore their inner space, and to start to thin that veil, mm-hmm. and carry more wisdom, and then try to teach our mm-hmm. grandchildren not to be so ballistic mm-hmm. in this world about just trying to, you know, be more capitalistic in and that becomes the fruit of their
yeah.
of their the source of their happiness, which obviously we know doesn't happen, but you don't really figure that out until you're old, and then you want to pass it back, you know. Anyway, I think that's really yeah. beautiful that you brought that up. I think it's a really important piece, an important piece of the puzzle. So you wrote a book about all this, right?
Yeah, I did.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the first half of the book is really going into our own unique stories and talking about that generational story that gets passed down, everything from the patterns, the subconscious patterning, but also what we've witnessed and even the wisdom that we've received from those that came before us. And it's also going into just the connection between your hormones and specifically your emotions, like hormonal anxiety, hormonal depression, rage that shows up, and just allowing us to be in more kind of perspective that we can use our emotions to our benefit. We can befriend them. We can understand them, that we don't have to fear the changes that we feel as our bodies are changing. And then the second half of the book is called The Her Method, where I break down, I actually bring a lot of Ayurveda in my method when I'm teaching and treating women. So there's three archetypes that I built out, like hormonal archetypes. So women can take a quiz to kind of see, you know, where they fit. Are they the anxious overachiever or the silent struggler and whatever that might be? And then there's treatment plans for that archetype. And there's, it's interesting when I was doing all of that, this is the beauty of Ayurveda, I think. When I first read the book Prakriti, I think I was traveling like many, many years ago. And, you know, like I was saying, coming from that lens of the Indian family, just knowing like it was just part of our everyday and our foods that we ate, and then going to naturopathic school, but still not really bridging the gap between the two. And I read that book and everything just made sense to me. So now for me, everything kind of falls into those categories. And then as I was building out those hormone identities, I started to realize, well, I just described Vata, I just described Pitta, I just described Kapha. And so we build in some of those, there's meal plans and grocery lists and all those things. But the best part of the book, I think, is the rituals that come in. It's the daily habits that women can tap into that aren't scary, that don't feel like you have to take an hour out of your day to meditate or an hour out of your day to go to the gym or anything like that. They're doable, tangible habits that you can bring in that will then start to transform your relationship with your body. Because my hope really is to instill self-trust in all of us. I think when we were talking about that idea of like fearing the future, like fearing aging, it's because we've lost trust in the wisdom that we actually carry. Because for so long, we're playing out somebody else's rules and stories. And so if we can unravel that and understand ourselves and really step into discernment, self-discovery, and curiosity about ourselves, we can then move into these transitions so much with so much courage and understanding and looking forward to it, like we were talking about before. So we don't have to be scared of change, especially when there's change in our body, and we don't have to go after that frantic thing that's on Instagram or whatever, like that the new thing that we have to do to live longer or quote unquote healthier. And so yeah, the hope with the book is just to instill that discernment and self-trust for people.
Yeah, I think the book sounds amazing, actually. I think I invite everybody to get a copy. And I think it's such a critical piece, that bridge that you're making between, you know, the stress and how it impacts our physiology and then the hormones. And all we do is treat the hormones, which just makes really very little sense. Obviously, makes sense because people can feel better with it a little bit, yeah. But we've really left the cause to be kicked down the road again and again and again and never really addressed the upstream issue. I've written some articles about the lymphatic system and the hormonal system. And with some of the interesting thing, you mentioned rituals. We all know that there's nitric oxide, which is really important, which is a vasodilator. won the Nobel research on it, won the Nobel Prize in like 1998 as a panacea. And it's what allows kids to roll downstairs when they're young and do it again and again because they're vasodilated, they're rubber. And as we get older, by 40, you lose 50% of your nitric oxide production, 80 by 75. So we lose that dramatically. But there are ways that we can navigate, because that comes from our food and proper digestion. You screw that up, you don't make it. That's and stress levels. And what's interesting is, I always go back to Ayurveda being Rasayana, being the study of longevity, and the study of the lymphatic system is so key. It turns out that the lymphatic system, the endothelium in the lymph system, is producing the major amount of your nitric oxide. And in the lymph nodes, 50% more of that nitric oxide, which is the vasodilator, which allows your lymph system to pump and move this through. And it turns out that that lymphatic system, which is so dependent on nitric oxide to move, take the trash out, carry your immune system, deliver fatty acids for hormone production and energy and things like that, is affected by nitric oxide. And that lymphatic system is directly affected not just by pumping action, by muscular pumping or jumping on a rebounder or hydration or eating green foods or red, black, or green or red, berries and things. All that's true. But what the lymph system and the nitric oxide is also affected by is ritual, or those things that you said, that those beneficial electromagnetic frequencies that create a feeling of safety that allows the system to vasodilate in a natural way. And this is the kind of the unsung stuff. And Ayurveda, what I love is the more subtle something is, the more powerful it is, right? And we have not, people think, oh, lymph is for cancer, and that's the end of the story, right? Except in the medical journals, there's volumes of research on lymph. None of it really is in medical practice. It's just the cancer thing. Well, it turns out that there's so much going on in that lymphatic system. And there's even lymphatics in the brain. And in Ayurveda, I'll tell you a quick story about a patient of mine. I'm going to send you an article that kind of talks about this story. But this woman came to me. She had a goiter in her neck about the size of a grapefruit. And it was, she had hyperthyroidism. Her numbers were over 2,000. She was, doctors wanted to radiate her thyroid and take, and destroy it. She didn't want to do that. She came to a Panchakarma for me. So when I had a Panchakarma center, and we gave her some of these nausea therapies, these really deep nausea therapies where you sniff a medicated oil up through the olfactory plate into the sagittal sinus, which turns out to be the brain's lymph and lymphatic systems, which drain your limbic system directly, by the way. And in Ayurveda, have been linked to holding on to old emotional trauma. That's what we do. We hold on to it. Kind of, it's like these traumas are etched into the waxy myelin sheaths and the white matter of your brain, keeping us locked into protective patterns. So they figured that out thousands of years ago. I don't know how they did that, but they did. And they developed therapies that anatomically can actually proven to actually get into the brain's sagittal sinus, drain the lymph in the meninges, in the dura mater, in the arachnoid space particularly, but also in the limbic system around the brain, and drain that out and release old emotional trauma. So this woman came to me, and she had a goiter here. And after her third treatment, she was writing in her journal, and she said that as I after she was writing in her journal, she said, I had this like epiphany. I was just sitting there, and I had this vision of me being abused when I was 14 years old. And she said, I completely blocked that out of my mind. I hadn't thought about it in decades. But in that period of time, her blood sugar was a mess. She had all types of health concerns, and now her thyroid was exploding. And she said, what was really strange about this sort of epiphany I was having was I wasn't so affected by the event itself. I was completely struck by my childhood before that event. I was just happy-go-lucky kid having this great life. That event happened, and then I became a hyper-vigilant 90-hour-a-week corporate executive with a perfect house and a perfect car and a color-coded closet. Everything in her life was perfect. Someone came to her house, she's going to clean for 3 hours, that kind of a thing. And she said, I looked at my life before the event, and I looked at that event. I looked at my life 20 years after, and she said, yeah, it wasn't great, but it wasn't worth 20 years of my life. And she said, I just wanted that life back. So she said, I was able to just let go of the trauma. I was just dropped it. True story, within a week, her thyroid was normal. You couldn't see the goiter in her anymore. her thyroid numbers came down like 200 points. Within 9 months, her thyroid was 100% normalized. I saw her at a Christmas party like 5 or 6 years later, and she came running up to me. This is in Denver. And she said she had two little girls with her that she wanted me to desperately meet because if and for her letting go of that trauma and her reaction to that event, being fight or flight constantly, she's I never would have had these kids. So this is the beauty of Ayurveda. You know, what you're bringing to the table is so beautiful because it's really, you know, there's physiological mechanisms for how we hold on to that stress, and Ayurveda mapped that out. And there's really good studies now that show that the brain lymph and glymphatic systems, which dump 3 pounds of trash out of our head every year while we sleep at night, are linked to anxiety, depression, cognitive decline, inflammation, infection, and even autoimmune concerns. So there's really good science. They only discovered the brain lymph 20 years ago, University of Virginia. So, but this is the beauty of connecting ancient medical wisdom with modern science and bridging that gap and going, you know what, there's so more to it than just saying, you're having a lot of PMS symptoms. Well, you know what? Here are the hormones to fix that for you. That is so far removed from how it actually happened, you know? And of course, you know, there's more science needed for some of these techniques for sure. But when you look at what's buried in the medical journals, which is not in medical practice, which aligns with Ayurvedic wisdom, which is what your teaching is really such a beautiful, beautiful system.
Can I see
In that article, you can read about that. And the technique, the technique at home yourself is what I have my patients do, because it's just for migraine headaches and all this kind of, you know, because we, and of course the pump, as you said in the very beginning, breath work, the diaphragm is the pump of your lymphatic system. And the first thing that happens when you get traumatized is you change how you breathe, which means you lose the pump of your cerebrospinal fluid, which means we're beginning that process, you know, early on. It's crazy, really.
And you know, I have so many examples, even in my own practice, in terms of women with fibroids and cysts, unexplained infertility, and we start working on the trauma and the stories come out, and all of a sudden she's feeling safe. She's able to let go and her physiology starts to change. Endometriosis also, I've seen that shift over time. There was a study, I don't know if you've seen this one, where they followed 66,000 women over around 16 years. And what they noticed was 100% of the women that had fibroids had some form of childhood abuse, physical, sexual, or emotional. And so we are starting to see that in the studies. We're starting to notice in science that, you know, our emotional body and our nervous system is connected, and stress plays a huge role in just how we show up in our world, like that woman who became that perfectionist. So if we think about our own stories too, we all carry some form of micro or macro traumas. I had a similar story to her, and I can also go back to the before me to the after me. And then when I, you know, had that aha moment of like, I've been living somebody else's story for so long, and I'm ready now to take that power back, because that power was given in that moment or taken away from me. And so when you start to heal, like your body then all of a sudden is just able to exhale, because it's been holding on so tight and just waiting for you to have that awareness. And the moment you do, it's ready to heal. It's ready to let go. And like, how brilliant was her body that it created that goiter right there around her voice, right? Around her communication, around her ability to speak what had happened to her, but she didn't remember it because her body protected her from that so that she could live life. So like, I hope everyone listening too is able to reflect on themselves and understand that your body is perfect and what it's doing for you. It's just up to us now to listen to the whispers and understand it.
Yeah, I'm sure your patients must absolutely love you, because you're the, you know, I think, you know, I know in my own practice, I think if we're in practice long enough, you realize that the things that happen to you become so critical pieces of the puzzle of how you're going to help others. It's almost like it happened to you so you can help others, you know? So it sounds like you are the perfect role model and example and teacher for so many in this regard, you know, I wrote an article years ago called "It May Not Be Hormonal," and And now we have a lot more research on the idea that it wasn't hormonal, it was lymph. And I found some studies years ago showing that there's a premenstrual lymphatic detoxification from the reproductive system, from ovulation to the beginning of the cycle. It's almost like the body says, okay, we're going to start preparing a detox process for you. So the onus of reproduction doesn't happen only on the reproductive system. We're going to give you some lymphatic support. But if you're premenstrual, and that progesterone adds to that congestion, that lymphiness, which is why you have more lymphatic flow at that time, holding onto water and things like that. So, but if you're dumping that lymph into an already congested lymphatic system because of poor digestion, then it's going to push it into your lymph. Your breasts will swell, you'll break out, you'll hold onto more water, get tired, your brain lymph will get congested, you get PMS-y kind of symptoms. And so I started giving my patients that had this concern, they were like hormonal issues, but they smelled and tasted mostly like lymph. So I'd give them this herb called Manjista, which is a lymphatic agent in Ayurveda. And then like 50 to 80% of the time, they got significantly better. So then finally, after years, I wrote an article about it saying, you know what, guys, it might not be hormonal. Yeah. And so now there's so much research on the idea that it isn't just a gas gauge that says you're low in a hormone. We do need to dig deeper. And I think the work that you're doing and some of the articles that I've kind of connected some of the ancient science with the wisdom, there's so much to do to help before you jump on a bioidentical hormone, which may be the end result, which might be good for some patients. But boy, before that, hormonal precursors and, you know, bringing the digestion back and dealing with the stress and the trauma. I mean, there's just like a lot there for folks to do.
Yeah, it sometimes feels easier to go for that thing that might resolve the issue in that moment symptomatically. I'm not perfect in that regard too. I'm perimenopausal and I did my hormone testing, and this month has been a lot for me in terms of like the book and got into an accident, and like there's so much, and I knew my stress was contributing to my changes in my cycle. But I also know I do all the right things that I don't need bioidentical hormones. I'm like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'm not sleeping well, I'll start taking some progesterone. Instantly, it changed my cycle, not for the better. And it just reminded me of like, go back to the foundation, go back to the foundation. Yes, for some women, that might be the thing to get them sleeping so that their lymph can drain, so all of that. But because of the work that I do, because of the knowledge I have, because of the work I have put into my body, I actually don't need that. What I needed to do was slow down. What I needed to do was actually be taken care of instead of taking care of everybody else in this month. So it reminded me to listen, because my intuition kept telling me, you know, take this month off of your practice. This month is going to be hard. Take them. And I didn't listen to that. And instantly I was told, yes, you know, your body will tell you right away when you start listening.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful story, such a great book, and what a wonderful journey you're on. And I applaud you for just being so candid about your own personal journey. And I think people really, really appreciate that, because we're all human beings. We're all going through it, you know, and that's what wisdom is, you know, willing to look and read between the lines and really understand what the upstream cause is. So I love your work. Thank you so much for coming today. Can you tell us how folks can get your book and get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Reach out to you. Yeah, so you can go to healyourhormonesbook.com to look at the book, and you can reach me on Instagram at Dr. Sonia Jensen, or you can go to my website, drsoniajensen.com.
That sounds great.
Thank you.
Sonia, really nice to meet you. Keep up the great work. And if anything comes up, you do any more work, let us know. Keep us informed about what your latest adventures are, okay?
I will. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute and tell you what we do here at lifespa.com. You know, I've been in practice now for 40 years, 38 of them have been practicing Ayurvedic medicine full time. For the last 20 years, I've been writing articles and doing videos on the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with the modern science. You know, if something's been around for 1,000 years, still practiced today, and you have modern science to prove it, boy, I really feel like that's something we should all be taking a look at. And that's what we do at lifespa.com. And all that information is for free. So just go to lifespa.com and search in your health topic, and you'll get the information, the article that you need, hopefully that will help you. While you're there, check out our Ayurvedic store. You can get there through lifespa.com or go to store.lifespa.com. And there we have all of our organic Ayurvedic herbs, our organic skincare line, more books, tapes, knowledge that we give you is all there at our store. All of our cleansing kits are there in our store. All of our herbs are whole herbs with the natural occurring microbiome, the way it came out of the soil. And that's critically important because if I took the bugs out of you, you'd be completely different. We take the bugs away from a plant, like sterilizing, making an extract, or spraying your food with pesticides, you lose significant benefit of that plant. And that's why we use the whole plant with the natural occurring microbiome. So check us out, learn more about what we're doing here at lifespa.com, and we'll see you again.
This recording is brought to you by LifeSpa, where ancient Ayurvedic wisdom meets modern science. Get access to free health video newsletters by Dr. John at LifeSpa.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.